The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Smoke from wildfires in Canada are affecting tens of millions of Americans in parts of the eastern U.S. New York City had the worst air quality of any major city on Earth yesterday as a dense haze obscured the city's skyscrapers. The smoke stretched all the way down to the Carolinas and is expected to get worse today.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, well, good afternoon. I don't know where you are listening right now, but boy, that smoke from Canada can make for some beautiful sunsets. That's for sure. Let's try to look for the good in this, right? If you have asthma, not so good, right? It can be a very difficult situation out there. It's pretty wild. In fact, my buddy John Harper's going to be joining me in a second. He was just reporting to Maggie what he's been seeing in his sky. And I don't know how smoky it is in your area. I mean, if you're not familiar with what's happening, there were wildfires in Ontario, and they have been drifting down here across the U.S. for, I guess it's the last week or so now. It's been impacting the upper Midwest, and the wind's shifted. It's now hitting the East Coast pretty hard. And John Harper's here with me right now. He lives in southern Connecticut. Tell us what he's seeing in his part of the world. Hi, John.
Hey, Drew. The sky is orange. I've never seen anything like this. It's actually orange. This morning, I had breakfast with a Relevant Radio benefactor, and in the 20-minute drive down the interstate, with the windows cracked in the car, my eyes were burning.
Whoa.
Because of the smoke. Now, the sun was out this morning. The sun is out right now, but you can't see it because of the smoke. As a result, it is not as warm now as it was this morning. I was speaking to a meteorologist friend, and I said, explain that. And he says, you know what this is? It's a light version of nuclear winter.
Wow.
There are so many particles and so much smoke and so much debris in the sky from these fires. It is blocking the sun's ability to heat the earth.
Wow.
Yeah. So temperatures have dropped because of the smoke.
How significantly have they gone down? Just a couple degrees, if that?
10 degrees.
10 degrees. That's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's big. That's big. Yeah.
Boy, that's amazing. And how are you doing? I don't know whether you have asthma or not, but I'm sure a lot of people who have sensitivity to that or respiratory problems, this can be really problematic.
Yeah, we have air quality alerts right now in 16 states, basically from Columbia, South Carolina, to most of New York State, and all the way up through Massachusetts, and for portions of Ohio, Michigan, all of the state of Indiana under an air quality alert right now, and it's really bad. And we're actually waiting for Major League Baseball to find out if they're going to cancel tonight's Yankee-Red Sox game and if the Phillies are going to cancel. So that could happen anytime during your show today, that Major League Baseball will cancel games. Minor League Baseball last night, two games, Scranton, Pennsylvania, Syracuse, New York, canceled because of the smoke. Ground stops at the area airports, delays mounting 2 and 3 hours, Newark, LaGuardia, Kennedy Airport, because the visibility is below 2 miles.
That's crazy. I never thought about air travel, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really significant. Is this a historic fire coming out of Canada, isn't it?
Very much so. There's geography that's involved here because it's so close. It's 400 miles from New York and through most of the Northeast. The smoke stays very low to the ground. And the same thing for those of you listening in Minneapolis in the upper Midwest, the smoke from the wildfires in the Canadian Rockies, because, again, of that geographic proximity, the smoke on northwesterly winds is very close to the ground. And as long as the winds stay out of the north-northwest, we'll continue to get this. Now, I'm looking at a live picture from right across the Hudson River, from New York City, from Newark, New Jersey to New York City. You can barely make out the skyline of New York City, and that's maybe 2 miles.
It's amazing. Well, John, stay healthy. Keep those windows rolled up. Keep that, I guess, AC on, although it's cold. Got to filter that smoke somehow.
Yeah, and by the way, if you have AC, they are suggesting, and if you're in any of these smoke areas in these 16 states, if you have AC, turn off the outdoor air portion of the AC to make sure that smoke doesn't go through your air conditioner and you bring it in the house that way.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, thank you, John. We'll continue to follow this. I'll see how things shake out by tomorrow as well and what happens with the the MLB. Last night, I saw Chris Christie make his announcement. I don't know if you've been following, how closely you've been following. I know you are. You eat, breathe, and sleep the news kind of like I do. What do you make of the current political climate, those who are throwing their hats in? I heard one commentator the other day say, hey, great, you know, the more candidates that are in, I mean, the Trump campaign was saying this, then
right.
You know, the better it is for him. But, you know, there's some different voices, different perspectives, Mike Pence, Chris Christie, and a number of people on the Republican side. And there's a lot of questions about the Democrat side, whether or not Joe Biden's going to be able to make that run or not, whether others sure. will get in. But give me your take on what's currently unfolding.
Well, here's Mike Pence. And obviously, it's going to be interesting because this is the very first time in the history of politics in the United States that a vice president will challenge the man he was on the ticket with. Very first time. Wow. So in 2024, Mike Pence will challenge, obviously, Donald Trump. And it will come down to a lot of these issues, just as Mike Pence was speaking a couple of hours ago in Iowa.
And on that day, President Trump also
and he's talking about January 6th.
And on that day, President Trump also demanded that I choose between him and the Constitution. Now voters will be faced with the same choice. I believe that anyone who puts themselves over the Constitution should never be president of the United States.
Wow.
And anyone who asks someone else to put them over the Constitution should never be president of the United States again.
So, you know, Drew, we're going to see an instant replay of that on the debate stage.
No, you know it. I mean, those are powerful words from Mike Pence. You know, I thought his opening campaign was pretty strong. But, you know, we'll see how it all shakes out. Right now, Trump is just crushing everyone, John.
Right.
He's dominating, and he may be the candidate in the end. What is it about Donald Trump that has so many Americans still in his camp? And are people open to at least maybe taking a look at a Pence, a DeSantis, a Christie, somebody else who's throwing their hat in?
You know, perhaps. Unfortunately, as you and I have talked about so many times, and as you have talked about with guests on your show with Dr. Paul Kengor and other experts, politics has turned into a reality show. Mm-hmm. So we have a reality show host who is plugging into that. You know, love him or hate him, what Donald Trump is very good at doing is determining what the people want, it's a show, you know, whatever it might be. And all of this goes into politics. But Chris Christie's got an uphill battle. Listen to these voters in New Hampshire.
What do you know about Chris Christie?
Actually, I never heard of him.
Wow.
I have no idea who Chris Christie is.
So there's an uphill battle.
Wow. Yeah, that's crazy. They never heard of the governor of New Jersey. Yeah. But, you know, it's true. I mean, a lot of people are not plugged in to into politics. I often marvel at that. You know, they go in and they just pull straight ticket. And a lot of these candidates, they have no idea. And, I can't hold them, can't blame them. Sometimes their interests lie in other areas. But you're right. I mean, some of these candidates have the work to do to get some brand and some name recognition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
John, we talked about the PGA yesterday. You know, merging with the golf league started by Saudi Arabia called LIV. And I was surprised. I mean, I knew it would be a story. I didn't realize it kind of led some national newscast yesterday. A little bit later, I'll be talking about, extraterrestrial life and aliens. And you think, what story is going to have the lead on that? But apparently the PGA and LIV is rankling a lot of people's change. Fox News' Brett Baer, he led with that story on his segment even before the U.S. intelligence officer claiming, hey, I've got an aircraft of non-human origin. And there are some who really think that this was a mistake. A lot of 9/11, a lot of people have lost loved ones in 9/11, still have issues with Saudi Arabia. What's going on here? Why is this story taking such traction? And how do you think in the end it'll just shake out?
It is that Saudi Arabia 9/11 connection and all of the terrorism that Saudi Arabia, just even internally, has we've seen, since 9/11. And it is about big money. There's a lot of money in professional golf. And I'm talking about those on the tour. But there's big money in running these two businesses. And they were both suing each other over the stealing of players. Some very big names went over to LIV Golf. And so this is a way to, I think, stay out of court, write those big checks, and bring everybody back together. It's interesting, and this is courtesy of PGAtour.com. Rory McIlroy, who's a very successful professional golfer, he reacted to Jay Monahan, who's the PGA commissioner, the decision to let the PGA Tour merge with LIV Golf. And he says this is not just about LIV.
I still hit LIV. Like, I hit LIV.
Like, I hope it goes away, and I would fully expect that it does. And I think that's where the distinction here is. This is the PGA Tour, the DP World Tour, and the PIF. Very different from LIV.
Yeah, so it is very different. It really is night and day. This really took not only the sports world, but the world by surprise yesterday. Yeah. That these, you know, arch enemies from just a year ago would join forces.
You know, one of our colleagues here who loves golf says he's no longer going to watch the Dodgers or the PGA. Patrick Alog was talking to me right before the broadcast. He says, you know, he's wondering, and this is a good question. I haven't really thought about this. I haven't thought through it. Will Saudi Arabia be getting involved in more sports in America? It starts with golf right now.
Yeah.
You know, what would happen if Saudi Arabia's public investment fund, let's say they want to buy a major sports team?
Right.
It's a lot to think about. You never know.
Yeah, it is.
All going to shake
out.
You know, speaking of that story leading over the UFOs, what do you make of that story? Have you followed that at all about this high-ranking government, this intelligence officer saying that we have indeed retrieved craft that is of non-human origin, and this has been held from Congress for a long time?
I've not followed that terribly closely. We were talking about it last week when you were away, and I was blessed to host your show. And there was some of the initial investigations by the government when they came out with it. There were some things that they could explain, but some things they still can't explain. And, yep. You know, I just believe in the things that they can explain. Yep. Are unidentified flying objects. And there may be more things out there. It's just not space junk that crashed into the ocean or just has found its way through the sky. And I have seen, I was driving home from work one night and there were these lights in the sky and, you know, every police department switchboard was lit up and no one has explained that in the years since I saw that. But it was fascinating to watch.
Was it a big object?
It was a string of, I would say, about two rows of 20 lights. And it was moving quickly across the sky, but not that fast that you couldn't track it. And so it was a very long track. It was almost as, you know, if you go to the beach and you watch SpaceX going by or something like that.
That's fascinating. Well, we're going to talk to Dr. Diana Pulsuka a little bit later about it. Some visionaries had asked the Virgin Mary about extraterrestrial life, other life. Padre Pio has even made comments regarding it. And we'll take a look at what the church teaches, what the Vatican Observatory has had to say. And we'll dive into that conversation with Diana Pulsuka coming up. John, one other big story today is Pope Francis. He had surgery, had to undergo general anesthesia. We know now he's up there in age. What do we know about the procedure, why he had to go in, and his condition?
Vatican is very quiet about these things, but all they're saying is that he's resting comfortably tonight. When I heard about his intestinal surgery, my mom went through some of the same things she had as the Pope did a couple of years ago, a couple of feet of her intestine removed, Pope Francis did. And some of these residual effects from the original surgery come back with those who are over the age of 75, and the Holy Father is 86, and my mom in her 80s as well. And they always recover from that. You know, it is debilitating. It is scary when it happens. But look at the Holy Father. He did his general weekly audience, had two meetings at the Vatican, and then went to the hospital to have the surgery.
Yeah. Hey, John, before I let you go, because Professor Harry Kramer is going to be stopping by, you and I were talking yesterday, right after the broadcast, about a 3-2 vote that the Oklahoma State Board approved the request to allow Catholic dioceses in the state to start a joint charter school. Both you, my producer Tom, and others are saying this is a really big story. Why is this a big deal?
It's a big deal, I think, because the Catholic Church is involved and the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City will run this online charter school. And of course, those who say the separation of church and state should take place. However, in the state of New York, there are the Hasidic Jewish community has operated charter schools and has gotten money from the state of New York.
Yeah. Well, you know, coming up a little bit later, right after the chat, but I'm going to dive into that with a guest as well. And Brett Farley will be joining me. So we'll try to unpack that and look at what that may portend for the future. John, thanks for your time. Always appreciate your insights.
I got to go find my COVID masks now so I can go outside.
Yeah, stay healthy. All right, brother. We'll talk soon. Thanks. That's John Harper. You'll hear him again delivering the news. Hey, coming up, Professor Harry Kramer is going to be joining me. I want to get his take on something. You know, we've talked so much about these Dodgers, so much about going woke, going broke, about Bud Light, Target, Walmart, right? I got to the point where I was kind of sick of it. And then I came across something that, well, it kind of surprised me a little bit. If you take together Target, Anheuser-Busch, and you just add them, they've lost about $36 billion in market cap, right, over the last couple of weeks because of their activism for the LGBTQ plus lobby. Now Fox is reporting that the Human Rights Campaign, along with GLAAD and GLSEN and other groups, just released a statement today asking Target and other businesses, look, reject, speak out against, you know, anti-LGBTQ plus extremism going into Pride Month. You've got to do this. 200 other progressive and LGBTQ organizations also signed up to that statement, which argued showing support for their community was good for business. In fact, they claimed it would make up for huge losses. I don't know. If I was a CEO after what I just saw happen to some of those companies, I would be very hesitant. One investor on Shark Tank is warning that Target and InBev might become the target of shareholder lawsuits who will argue that the companies are supposed to be making sure their shareholders get the value for the money that they put into that company, and that aligning with the gay lobby is hurting them. So one good thing coming out of it is that people are now looking at alternatives to the dominance of these big companies. Harry Kramer is an executive partner with the Madison Dearborn Partners. It's a private equity firm based in Chicago, and he's also a clinical professor of strategy at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management. A great friend of Relevant Radio over the years, and it's a delight to be able to talk to him and tap into his expertise. Harry, thank you for your time. Good afternoon.
Always good to be with you, Drew.
You know, this story has gotten so big, and as I was saying, I came across an articles where now companies, their new cause is to dodge these culture wars. They see these things, you know, whether it's North Face or Bud Light, I can go through a whole litany of these things. They're realizing it, hey, it may hurt their bottom line. Give me your take on what's happening now. Has Bud Light, has Target, has so many of these other companies that have taken a beating as a result of this, is this a wake-up call for them? Disney and others that are trying to go woke, will they stay out of this? Or do you think they're going to continue to go down this lane?
Well, I'm always smiling, Drew, because as a former CEO, the way I look at this and the way they taught me this when I was the CEO of Baxter many years ago is, but the bottom line is a company should really be politically neutral. A company shouldn't even get involved in this. It's really not a company issue. Some of this stuff is a personal issue. And the reality of life is, when I saw some of these things, I said, what are you guys thinking, right? I mean, we live in a free market capitalistic system. As you sort of hinted, when somebody buys a stock at $30 a share, the reason they bought the stock at $30 a share is that they expect it to increase to 40 or 50 so they can buy a house, their kids can go to college, they can retire. And when you do amazingly crazy things and lose, by the way, which I think it's now up to your point, it's up to like $40 billion,
wow,
they are going to get sued. I mean, it's absolutely, and the thing you have to ask yourself is, what are you thinking? And one of the things, yeah, I do in my Kellogg class, Drew, when somebody says they're surprised, you know, hey, the Bud Light thing, I'm surprised. My line is always, I'm surprised you're surprised. I mean, what were you thinking of doing? And what did you think the great majority of your customers would think when you did that? And so there's a lack of logic. I think some of these people really weren't thinking. I think some of these CEOs are in trouble because they certainly didn't let the board know, because I serve on a lot of boards. If I had known that the CEO was thinking about doing that, I would have explained to him, no, you do not want to go there, because this has nothing to do with the whole reason that you're in business.
Yeah,
you're
absolutely right. I'm sitting back here. Just objectively, just as a layman looking at this, it's just bad business, right? I mean, I'm thinking, like, even when it comes to talk radio sometimes, you know, if I talk politics, there are people who think I'm partisan one way or the other, right? I mean, and people get upset, you know, when it comes to buying a product, right? Do you really want to alienate a certain portion of your audience? I mean, why not just stay out of this? I think some CEOs are probably thinking, should we weigh in on sensitive political or social matters? That's not really their job, right? Their job is to give a return to their investors. It's to move product, right? To build that bottom line. And yet so many companies have gone down this avenue. And I wonder in some respects, as a CEO yourself, this diversity, equity, and inclusion, these ratings that a lot of these companies are getting seem to be influencing upper management. And I don't know why they care so much about that.
Yeah, well, they really shouldn't be, Drew, and I think they're losing track of what they really ought to be doing. I mean, again, you're running a company. I mean, when somebody says, okay, what's your view on gun control? Well, think about it. If I'm at Baxter and I have 55,000 people, yep. Well, by definition, some people think we ought to have guns and some people think we shouldn't.
Right.
So you're in a company, you're almost a representative of the diversity of the country. So we all realize all the issues we have as a country trying to resolve these things. What are you going to be doing when you ought to be running a company and generating a return and selling your product to customers?
Right.
So I think it's people just not thinking about what they're doing. And then realizing, guess what? There are multiple sides to every single one of these issues. You know, I used to think, Drew, that, you know, I used to say, maybe there's another side to the issue. No, there's multiple sides of the issue. And just being aware of them and listening to the different perspectives without getting involved in it, mm-hmm. where there's no win. There's no win in this.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I see this thing. Here's the thing. Bud Light, in that boycott, you know, you're talking tens of billions of dollars now they've lost, right?
Yep.
The Bud Light boycott, I think, is a little bit different than some of these others, you know, North Face or whatever product you want to look at. Maybe even Target, although Target has been really spanked in this whole process. The reason I say Bud Light is because, okay, people have other options. I'm not going to drink Bud Light, but I will drink Miller Lite or Coors Light or Amstel Light or whatever the light is that you want, right? There's a lot of alternatives there for you. So it's easy to kind of boycott that. Target, they've taken a hit. Walmart has done the same thing, but they haven't. And I thought, well, is because Walmart's only in specific geographic regions. I mean, certain people, that's the only place they can shop, or maybe because the pricing is so low and so competitive, people are willing, in a very difficult economy, to say, well, I'll look beyond this issue because I want to save some money because I need to. What do you make about how customers are responding to these different companies? And how long do you think the punishment, let's say for Bud or for Target, will hold out?
Well, I think it is directly related. You said it, Drew. It's directly related to what your alternatives are. You got a million alternatives for a light beer. You know, you live out in a rural area or whatever. You don't have an alternative to Walmart. You know, it's like when some of the crazy things that, you know, that an Uber would do. Well, if you don't take an Uber and you got to get someplace, how are you going to get there? So a lot of this really depends on what are the customer alternatives. And I think some of these people, hopefully enough people have gotten burnt now to realize, what are we doing? And instead of a CEO saying, hey, you know what? I'm not going to comment on that. I think some of these people, they got relatively big egos, and it's like, oh, I'm going to comment because I need to comment. No, you don't need to comment other than no comment.
Right. No, I could not agree with you more. Hey, it's just bad business. The gay lobby that's out there right now, and a lot of their other allies, as I was saying in the very beginning here, are saying to the companies, hey, don't pull back now. You know, put the pedal to the metal. We'll make up for the shortfall. what do you make
absurd.
Of that? I mean, I don't know if there's that many people that can make up for that shortfall.
No, trust me. There is no scenario they're going to make up for the 40-some billion that have been lost already. I mean, I hope nobody is crazy enough to believe that. That is definitely a losing strategy.
So, you know, you've been in business a long time. Is this historic? I can't remember personally watching a company like Bud or some of the other ones we just mentioned get punished the way they have recently. It really seems that people are fed up, and this is the best way they can communicate. You know, I mean, the letters and emails are one thing, but your bottom line really speaks volumes. Have you ever seen anything like this?
No, I think it's worse than it's ever been, Drew, and we talk about this a lot at Northwestern. I mean, the reality of life here, unfortunately, is, and you know this, Drew, I know you guys talk about this, is that think about what's happened with the polarization in this country.
Yeah.
I mean, Drew, as recently as 5-6 years ago, you could have a view, I could have a view. Yeah. Gun control, immigration, whatever. Well, I still like you. I still respect you. We just have a different view. Well, what's happened in the last 5-6 years, Drew? Now, if I have a different view than yours, guess what? I don't like you. In fact, I may hate you. And in fact, I may have to stop you. Our inability to understand multiple perspectives, Drew, has disappeared. It has absolutely disappeared. And, you know, I always think of that St. Francis quote, which Julie hears me say this all the time, you know, and she's on the board of Relevant Radio. She always says, I always say to her, you know, this whole idea of St. Francis, I seek to understand before I'm understood. Let's take the time to understand, even if we disagree, Drew, let's take the time to understand. Because I literally think of it, if I have a disagreement with you and I say, Drew, I don't understand. But in a way, that's ignorant. If I take the time, I can understand. Then I'll decide whether I agree or disagree. And the problem, Drew, is we've become so unbelievably polarized.
Yep. That's so true.
Yeah, very often. They They have their understanding of their perspective. Yeah. It's like an echo chamber, and they have absolutely no understanding of other perspectives. So and if you don't understand the other perspectives, you're in a world of hurt because you don't know what the middle ground is. Yeah. You lose track of everything.
That is so true. My guest today is Professor Harry Kramer, and let's grab a quick phone call. Brian is in Las Vegas, Nevada. Brian, hi. You're on the air. Go right ahead.
Hello. Hi.
Hey.
So, yeah, I'm listening to you gentlemen speaking about this, and I was wondering if you were aware that all these companies are kind of being blackmailed by, I don't know if you heard about it recently, but this this new credit score that's given, that's a made-up thing by an organization, I think it's called HRC, that Soros is funding. So it's, I don't really think it's about...
Yeah, let's talk about that. Brian, thank you for your call. I mean, great point. And Professor, I kind of alluded to that in the very beginning. And as a chief executive officer, I don't know if you had to deal with that stuff in your day, but today a lot of companies and major financial institutions, too, are making sure they get this 100% score. Explain a little bit about how that works and why these companies like Vanguard and so many others are trying to capitulate to this diversity, equity, and inclusion group and why that score means so much to them.
Yeah, well, it's like everything in life, Drew. I always say, no answers, opinions. To me, everything, Drew, everything needs to be in balance. So what do I mean by that? Is the idea that the DEI has some value? Is there value in, hey, we ought to be diverse. We ought to think about, that's fine. But you don't take it to extreme. You don't start trying to score people and people doing crazy things to achieve some score. But the reality of life is, if people don't understand multiple perspectives, if they start to think, hey, guess what? You know, we're going to focus on DEI. We want the board now to be completely diverse. Well, we want the board to be completely diverse, but don't you want people on the board that are intelligent and that are well-seasoned who can help you increase the stock price? So, you know, at the end of the day, oh, great, we have this really diverse score, but guess what? The stock price is half of what it was 6 months ago. Oh, then that'll be a problem. And I look at it and say, well, what do we want? Do we want diversity? And inclusion, or do we want a higher stock price? Yeah. To which I always say, Drew, no matter what question somebody asks me, I say, yes, you want both, but it's got to be in balance. And right now, Drew, this thing has gotten completely out of balance, completely out of balance.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, Professor, thank you for making time for us today. And our best and warmest regards to Julie. Look forward to seeing both of you guys soon, okay?
You take good care. Call anytime, Drew. Take good care.
That's Harry Kramer. I've got to take a short pause here. Nobody better to talk to about that issue than him. As I said, he not only teaches, but has led corporations, and his insight to me is invaluable. When I return, I'm going to just hit on another aspect here I think you should hear about. The American birth rate right now, I don't know if you're aware of this, it's actually plummeting, but not in some states. You know, we reported in the past about the pandemic, how that caused a baby boom in certain states. You might be surprised what states birth rates increased and why the American birth rate is now in free fall.
Insight and analysis right here. It's the Drew Mariani Show. Relevant Radio.
Hey, today we'd like to thank Larry, who's listening in Illinois, for donating his 1994 Yamaha Wave Runner. You can join thousands of other listeners in donating old vehicles, trucks, boats, and RVs by visiting relevantradio.com/car. That's relevantradio.com/car.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, the Chaplet of Divine Mercy is about 30 minutes away. Tell one other person about it today. Have them join us. Some big, very heavy intentions coming in. A lot of answered prayers flowing, and we'll get into all that in about 30 minutes. Right now, if you are joining me, I've been monitoring something that has, will have a profound impact, not just on you, but really your children and your children's children. And that's the demographic winter that the U.S. is beginning to head towards. At the very beginning of the pandemic, there was this belief that, man, we're going to have this big baby boom, right? What was the logic behind it? Well, people are at home, right? It means more baby-making activities, right? That's not what happened. And I was surprised. I thought, well, that kind of makes sense, right? But instead of a boom, there was actually a bust. And a lot of wealthy countries, including the U.S., saw birth rates drop. Scientific America, I saw a report that they put out. They said that the birth rate dropped significantly at the start of the pandemic. Then it rose again, but it didn't rise enough to get back to where we were before. There was a team at New York University's Langone Health. They wanted to find out a little bit more about what was going on, so they ended up digging deeper into the stats. And what they found, I thought, was kind of astonishing. It makes sense when you think about it. The states and regions that had the biggest decline in fertility, they were more likely to have higher percentage of Democrats and non-white residents and more social distancing. So in contrast, if you look at Republican, if you look at those red states, fewer non-white residents, less social distancing, they were more likely to experience fertility increases. And the findings suggested that the degree to which states or regions took the virus seriously, you know, in other words, or maybe even overreacted to it, that affected whether they were likely to see, you know, a drop or a bump in fertility rates. So in general, the residents of Democratic-leaning states and Washington, D.C., they tended to view COVID as a greater threat, whereas the people in Republican-leaning states, they were less likely to see the disease as dangerous. And again, look, I don't want to broad brush everything here. I'm just sharing with you what they are reporting here. I know there's exceptions all along the way, but I'm not sure if that means that people in the so-called red states were a little more optimistic. They decided that, hey, you know, we're going to get through this. Maybe it was the media they were consuming. Maybe, I don't know. You know, those in the blue states, fertility was down. And that is very telling. It really is. We're also seeing, just one other note here, that the birth rate in the U.S. has been steadily declining for quite a while now. You know, replacement rate in the country, in order to have a stable birth rate, you need 2.1 births per woman. We have now dropped to 1.7. And that's not quite as bad as some other countries. I mean, Japan is in the middle of an they actually have a population crisis going on right now. And we know other countries have given incentive. In a place like Russia, we're paying people $10,000 to have kids. You know, the reality is that the average number of births per woman in a society that's required to maintain a stable population, 2.1. America is not there. Now, you might be surprised who's having children, too. It's older women, not younger. But that's a whole other conversation. Let me welcome to the table here, to the program, Stephen Mosher, who's president of the Population Research Institute. He is widely recognized as one of the leading authorities on the population question, especially in China. And China's actually changed their one policy child. We could talk to him about that as well. But he's online. If you want to follow him, it is pop.org, POP.org. Stephen, good to have you back. Good afternoon.
Hello, Drew. Good afternoon to you.
So the overall declining birth rates during the pandemic, that was a surprise. It was not expected. What was your takeaway from that? I kind of thought, yeah, we'll probably see people are locked down for a couple of years. We might see more births.
Your take. I think that we talked about that. We may have talked about that because I was going around at the beginning of the lockdown saying, okay, well, if you lock young couples inside their home for a few weeks on end, they might decide to find comfort in each other's arms and conceive a child. In fact, we have family members, my son Andrew and his wife, who did not let COVID derail their plans to have a family. They, as pro-life Catholics, living in Kentucky, rural Kentucky, the lockdowns did not affect their daily life. The plant he was working at did not shut down. And, you know, masking and distancing at work was annoying, but once they got home, the mask came off, as it were. And they conceived a child, and then we now have a grandson, Miles, born during the COVID pandemic. So, but yeah, the overall birth rate dropped during the pandemic. I was one of those who was telling people that that I think we will see a baby boom. Instead, we had a baby bust throughout the United States. Well, throughout the United States, but on average, the United States saw birth rates fall. But very, very interesting. There were states, many of them red states, where not only did the birth rate not drop, but it actually increased. We see states like Texas, Florida, Montana, Alabama, some other states have seen during COVID, during the peak of COVID, had birth rates go up as I predicted they would. So we've got this study you mentioned from Scientific American, very interesting, based on a scientific study published in a journal called Human Reproduction. The drop in fertility was not uniform. They say, yeah, it's a red state, blue state difference. And that's true, but it's kind of fudging the question because, Drew, it's really a question of, did you have a Democrat governor who believed that government intervention could solve the problem? Or did you have a Republican governor who was willing to let localities and counties and cities decide for themselves what their policy was going to be? And if you had the latter, if you had a Republican governor and legislature that basically kept their hands off the economy and let people decide for themselves, what level of risk were they willing to take instead of imposing, right, society-wide lockdown, society-wide social distancing, closing the schools, closing the churches? If you let people decide for themselves whether or not they were going to go out, whether or not they were going to mask, life went on as usual, and in fact, the babies did start coming.
So your thoughts then on why, I mean, the red states in terms of birth trends during the pandemic were up? Are there factors that explain that?
Well, absolutely, because, well, look, the study's authors in the journal Human Reproduction hypothesized that increasing COVID cases will influence fertility rates, okay, by heightening anxiety and impose and pandemic-related restrictions. But it wasn't increasing COVID cases, Drew. It was the panic on the part of state governments. I mean, we know that the number of COVID cases in many cases were wildly inflated by federal subsidies. You get more of what you pay for. Yep. And everyone was testing all the time, and we were getting all these positives back, and everybody was panicking. But what happened then was a reflection of the fundamental difference, I think, in the governing philosophy of Democrats and Republicans. The severity of the COVID wave in a given state was completely unrelated to the change in fertility rate. Didn't matter whether you had lots of COVID cases or a few COVID cases, it didn't affect the fertility rate. What affected the fertility rate was the state's political leaning, whether or not it had a Democrat government or a Republican government. Very, very curious. You know, Republican-run states like South Dakota, Utah, scarcely locked down at all. Florida, where I live most of the year, locked down at the beginning, but lifted the lockdowns after a fairly short time. And you know that other states kept them in for more than a year. And those states that didn't lock down or that lifted the lockdowns did see, in some cases, major increases in fertility. So it wasn't the pandemic, so-called, that was affecting birth rates. It was the panic reaction of state governments to the notion that there was a deadly virus at large that was going to kill one out of every 10 people. That collapsed the birth rates in some states. And, of course, there were the economic consequences. My goodness, you closed down all the small businesses. Millions of people lost their jobs. In the first wave, of course, you didn't have any money coming in. You didn't have the COVID supplementary payments that people later started giving. And a lot of people at the lower end of the income scale said, well, we lost our job. We can't afford to have children. But again, that was a reaction to the state governments shutting down businesses and closing down the economic sector. The economic devastation caused by lengthy closures in some states, we now know, caused more loss of life than COVID did. Quite frankly, the number of people who lost their lives because they lost their access to health care, because they lost their job, because they couldn't get in to see a doctor, because they couldn't get their prescription medications, because they were languishing at home, because they got depressed, they turned to drugs, alcohol. The number of lives lost, we now, these are studies that have been carried out 3 years too late, of course, but now they've been carried out showing that the loss of life from the lockdowns is greater than the number of lives saved by the lockdown. So it was a huge mistake. We should never repeat it.
But my guest today, Stephen Mosher, president of the Population Research Institute. Let me grab a quick call, and you can get in if you'd like to. The number's 888-914-9149 and join the conversation. We'll also talk about demographics. I mean, there's a certain population of women that are having children and others that aren't. But first, Maria, who's listening in Baltimore, Maryland, has an interesting insight to what we're seeing, maybe why the demographic numbers of Dems is a little bit lower. Maria, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Yes. I was going to say that instead of speaking of fertility rates, really, we should be speaking of birth rates, because the fertility could be the same all over the country, but in those blue states, because they've been scared by the left not only to lock down, but not to have a child, they're aborting their babies.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely right. I mean, look, there are people who think that by not having a child, they're saving the planet. Now, I think the planet, God's green earth, can hold all of us, you know, and that that God has provided us with the resources we need as our numbers grow, that it actually means we would be better off, not worse off. But there are a lot of people who've been propagandized into believing that they're doing the socially responsible thing by not having children. So there is that, especially in the blue states, I think, that affects fertility. And, of course, where you have strong pro-life sentiment, the average pro-lifer, my goodness, averages three children. The average person on the other side of the equation who is strongly pro-abortion averages about one. So there's a big difference there. And that difference goes across, you know, from red states to blue states. That's another signal dividing the states.
All right, I got to hold it here. I'm going to take a short pause. When we come back, we'll go back to the phones, take a few more calls. If you want to get in, it's 888-914-9149. The U.S., its birth rate remains stubbornly low. There are some very, I think, interesting revelations and some new data regarding who's having children and who is not. We'll dive into that. We'll take a few of your calls, and our conversation will continue right into this. This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More info, including disclosures at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
Somehow it doesn't mean very much unless you've got someone to share it with.
This is the Drew Mariani Show, the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. Coming up next.
Yeah, we're about 10 minutes away from that. I look forward to praying with you. Right now, if you're just joining me, we're taking a look at a couple things. During the pandemic, we expected a baby boom. We didn't see that. And new data is revealing that red states had higher birth rates than blue states. The question is, why? Well, what was the reason for that? You know, here in our own country, and this is something we should really be aware of. My guest today, Stephen Moser, who's head of the Population Research Institute, has been warning America and championing this for a very long time. We need to be open to life, right? Just for the future of this country. And our nation right now has been steadily declining, you know, with only a few exceptions for well over a decade now. It's actually probably going on more than that. But there's been a shift in the demographic age in which women are having children. This is what really struck me. What do you mean a demographic shift in age, right? Well, births now to moms who are 35 and older continue to rise. That's a big number. It's the highest rate in that group since the 1960s. Those were offset by record low rates to mothers in their teens and early 20s. And that's when most women have their babies, right? Your early 20s. That was a report that came from the CDC. And its report was based on a review of 99% of birth certificates issued last year. So what we're seeing is older mothers, the largest number of births came from mothers who were 35 years and older. Meanwhile, the number of young women in their late teens and early 20s, once the leaders in those birth rates, is now at a record low. And that is problematic for a number of reasons. And we can get into that. But I want to welcome back to the conversation Steve Mosher. And we'll talk a little. We'll take a few of your calls if you're on hold. You know, just hang out. We'll get to you. Steve, let's pick up on that point if we could very quickly. What's driving older women to have more children and younger women to have less? Because there's an issue with older women having children. And I'm not opposed to anyone having a child, right? But we're taking a look at a number of different factors. I think that, you know, marriage rates are part of it. The marriage rates are now 60% lower than they were 50 years ago. Contraception, there's a lot of other issues, but that are driving depopulation. But give me your take on this disparity in age.
Yeah, well, my wife was 22 when she had our first child, and she had our last one. She was 39, almost 40. But the thing is, it gets more difficult as you get older, and eventually the biological clock stops ticking. And in the COVID pandemic context, you know, if you were in a panic over COVID and you decided to delay childbearing by a year or two because you were worried about any number of things, we were all worrying about any number of things a couple years ago. If you were in your early 20s or mid-20s or even 30, it didn't matter. But say you were 37 or 38, and you decided to delay childbearing for a couple of years, and guess what? By the time you felt comfortable to have a child again, the biological clock had stopped ticking, and you were not able to. So, you know, fertility, we always say in demography that fertility delayed is fertility denied, because you can never get, you can never have last year's baby, right? You lose that opportunity to have a child forever. And you can't continue to have children indefinitely into the future. So that was one thing I think that that has caused the birth rate to drop, because a lot of people in COVID postponed having children. And the older you get, the more difficult it becomes. The other thing I wanted to mention about the study we've been talking about that shows that red states in some cases had a baby boom and the blue states all saw a baby bust. That study did not look at the effect of COVID infections or the effect of the vaccine on the rates of live birth. And I think it should have, because we know, you know, I had trouble with the vaccine from the beginning, Drew, because it was derived from a stem cell line, HK293, which came from an aborted baby girl back in 1972. And so I don't want abortion-tainted vaccines at all, period. But I had another problem, because as soon as the vaccine began to be rolled out, we had reports of higher rates of miscarriages and stillbirths and birth defects. And I think it is dangerous, especially early in pregnancy, to inject genetic material into a woman's body when the tiny baby is just forming its organs, when the tiny baby's development is just getting started. I think that can cause and has caused a lot of problems. So one of the reasons I think the birth rate is down is because of higher rates of miscarriage, sadly, which ought to be looked at in the future, because every miscarriage is a tragedy. Lots of things to talk about with regard to the pandemic. We should never, ever go down that particular road again.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, Doctor, or Stephen, to think about what takes place in the future. To your point on vaccines, I've got a friend who sends me emails almost on a daily basis, and some of the studies that are coming out from women who have been vaccinated, we're worried. I wonder how that will impact fertility rates. Are there studies now being done, or are they going to look at a line of demarcation, say, okay, pandemic ended on this date, and we're seeing a decline in birth or a rise in infertility rates or complications? I don't know how they're going to sort all that out and how they can attribute it to the vaccine.
Yeah, well, you know, the question is, who's going to pay for such studies?
Right.
Because obviously the vaccine manufacturers aren't interested in eliminating the problems that their vaccine causes, and there are many, myocarditis and pericarditis and a whole list of other complications from the vaccine. The federal government doesn't appear interested in reviewing the safety and efficacy of vaccines that they approved on an emergency basis without thorough studies.
Right.
They don't want to look back. They hope that they can just move on and that we'll all forget about the problems that resulted from the mandatory vaccine campaigns. But someone needs to look at this. And I think when you look at some European countries, Sweden, for example, Germany has reported birth rates falling 25% after the vaccination was rolled out. And that may be maybe effects on fertility that prevent conception. That may very well be a factor. It may be very, very early miscarriages, too early to be detected. So early, in fact, that a woman just thinks that her menses is late by a day or two. And it may be miscarriages later on in pregnancy. But those numbers should be available in the years to come. It's just that without generously funded studies, it's going to take longer for the truth to come out. And there are a lot of people, I mean, the bureaucrats who oversaw, Dr. Anthony Fauci and the others who oversaw the vaccine rollout, not a vaccine, it's a gene therapy rollout. The people who funded the studies, that is Big Pharma, and made $100 billion. The people at the FDA and the CDC who look forward to their retirement when they go to work for Big Pharma and make really big money. All of those people, none of those people have an interest. And most of the media, with your honorable exception here, is not willing to talk about it, because they were on the mandatory vaccination bandwagon early on, and they don't want to go back and admit that they were misled as well. So we have a lot of headwinds to overcome here, but the truth comes with the grace attached, And we just need to keep speaking the truth and let as many people know as possible.
That's wonderful. Hey, my guest today, Steve Mosher, he's the president of the Population Research Institute. You can find him online at pop.org. Steve, I have a moment left for you. Is there any resource that we can get people connected to or anything you want to make people aware of before we wrap it up here?
Well, our website is pop.org. We publish a weekly briefing on these subjects. In fact, my next weekly briefing coming out in a couple of days will be precisely on the study that we were talking about today, taking a deep dive into it. People need to know that we're in demographic decline. We need more babies.
Yeah, I look forward to reading that. It's something we have to continue to sound the alarm on. And we had more time. I'd love to unpack why this is problematic. Some people, I think, don't really understand that. But I've got to leave it right here because I'm up against the clock. Thank you for your time. Always good to talk with you.
Thank you. God bless.
God bless you. That's Steve Mosher. Check him out at pop.org. That's pop.org. Americans are having fewer babies. The U.S. birth rate is down sharply. And there are a number of factors that are driving to that. We have to be open to God's law, to natural law, right? We got to be open to life. There's a blessing that comes with it. And when we begin to play God, when we contracept, when we abort, when we limit life, there are long-range consequences for that. So let's pray when I come back. We'll pray for those mothers contemplating abortion. We'll pray for those who may not know the truth, might be using artificial contraception right now, limiting their families. They think that's the best thing to do. Let's just pray for God's mercy on this country, a nation I think that deserves his justice because of the ways that we so deeply offend him. But thank God for his mercy. We'll pray when I return.